We're holding on Ayin Aleph Omud Bey's last line. We learned yesterday about the clothes of the Kohen, of the Kohen Hediot and the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Hediot, three out of the four of them are made all out of linen. The fourth one, the Avnet, there's Machlokas in several places in our Masechta, whether it was also made just out of linen or whether it was made out of various kinds of wool as well. So we established some, and then of course the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. You have the Me'il, which is made all out of Tchelis. You have the pomegranates on the bottom of it that are made out of Tchelis, Agamon, and Telas Shani, without any linen in it. And then you have the Choshen and the Ephod, which are made out of a mixture of Tchelis, Agamon, Telas Shani, and linen and gold. And then there's the Poroches. So we said that we said anything where it says Sheish means that it has to be a six-ply thread. And we said, actually, so that refers not only to the linen clothes, but also all the other materials. Every material that the woven things are made out of, each material is going to be a six-ply thread. So when there's tchelas, it's going to be a six-ply thread of tchelas. When there's argamon, it's going to be a six-ply thread of argamon, and so forth. We learned that from the fact that there's a pasuk that repeats the word sheish several times, and we said one of them is for that drasha. So we said that the linen clothes are six ply threads. The rimonim at the bottom of the me'il are made out of three types of material, and each one of them is an eight ply thread, totaling 24. The me'il itself is made out of 12 ply thread. We said the poreches 24 and the choshen eifed 28. So we're in the middle of discussing how we know that. So we discussed how we know, first of all, that the clothes that are made out of linen, how do we know that the word sheish or bad means linen? We talked about how we know that those ramonim are three materials and each of them is an eight ply thread. So now we're up to the next one. Me'il shneim osim menorah. Where do we know that the me'il consists, that the me'il, which is made all out of tchelas, is made of 12 ply threads? So diftib, because the pasuk says, va'asisas me'il ha'efod klil tchelas. The pasuk says you should make the me'il for the ephod. It's called the me'il of the ephod, by the way, because the me'il itself doesn't, so like this, you have the ksonis, which is sort of like an undershirt. It's a long shirt that goes down to his ankles, and then it's belted and held in place with the avnate. Then you have the me'il goes over that. The me'il is like a sleeveless cloak, and then the belt, that it doesn't have its own belt. Instead, it's belted in place using the belt of the ephod. Therefore, it's called the me'il of the ephod. So the pasuk says So the pasuk says, "Va'asisas me'ilah eifod klil tchelas." You should make the me'il of the eifod of klil tchelas. Now, the simple meaning of klil tchelas means completely out of tchelas. In other words, unlike the other begadim, which are made out of mixture of materials. But Rashi explains the word klil also means a twist, a gdil. A twist, by definition, requires two strings at least. So therefore, so we see that you have to have two threads twisted together to make the me'il. And since we established before from the word sheish, so that the Gemara says, v'yalef tcheles, tcheles v'poreches. So now we learn a gzeda shava on tcheles from the poreches. Ma lahal and shisha. Now we established before that each time when the posuk says that you have to have sheish, then it means you have to have six ply threads. The poreches is made of tcheles, argamon, telas, shani, and sheish. Therefore, we learn from that that each of those four types is twisted into six. You have six threads twisted together to make a six ply thread of tchelas, a six ply thread of argamon, etc. And then you twist all those together. Then you spin all those together to make a 24 ply thread. So therefore, just like in the poreches, you have a six ply thread of tchelas, afkan shisha. So the same way over here with the me'il, you have to have each of these two threads that goes together to make the me'il to make the fabric of the me'il has to be six plies. So therefore, that means two times six is 12. So that's how we see that the me'il is 12 plies. But the Gemara asks, "V'neilach mishulav v'rimonav." Instead of learning it from the poreches, why don't we learn the me'il instead from the hems of it, where you have the rimonim, where we said before the rimonim are 8-ply threads, right? Welding on the top of Ayin Bez Amud Aleph. So how do we? So why are we learning from the Poreichas and saying that it's 6-ply threads and then you double them and you have 12? Maybe instead you should learn from the Rimonim. Malahalan Shmona Achkan Shmona, and say just like by the Rimonim, you have an 8-ply thread of Tchelas. So the same way over here, you have to have, and we learned that before. We said we learned that yesterday. Ultimately, from the fact that we do learn the Rimonim from the Poreichas, and say the Poreichas was 24-ply threads. Therefore, the Rimonim are also 24-ply, but the difference is the Poreichas consisted of 4 minim, so therefore it's 6 apiece, and the Rimonim consist of 3 minim, so 8 apiece. So maybe instead we should learn from the Rimonim, Malahalan Shmona Afkan Shmona. Over there you have an 8-ply thread of Tchelis. So maybe over here you have to have each of the 2 plies that then goes into making the Me'il, which we said Klil Tchelis means that you have to have 2 threads twisted together. So that means each of them has to be 8 plies, and then you have Afkan Shmona. So the same thing over here, 8. In that case, that would be the Me'il has 16-ply threads. Where are you getting 12 from? The answer is done in Kli Mikli, then done in Kli Mitachshit. Logically, we're going to derive 1 keli of the Beis Hamikdash from another keli. Namely, the Me'il, which is a keli, it's one of the garments of the Kohen Gadol, from the Poreichas, which is also considered a keli. Now, yesterday we actually said we called the Poreichas Oihel. It's part of the tent. It's part of the structure of the Mishkan. But in a certain sense, Tosfos elsewhere explains that in a certain sense, the Poreichas can also be called a keli for a couple of reasons, one of them being that they actually used it to wrap around the Aron when they were traveling, as it says at the end of Parashas Bamidbar. So therefore, in that sense, it can be considered a keli because they wrapped the other kelim inside it. So we're going to learn it that way rather than learning from the Rimonim, which are not themselves a keli. They're only a decoration for a keli. So the question is, Adraba, on the contrary, done in Gufa mi Gufa, then done in Gufa mi Alma, wouldn't it be more logical to learn something about the Me'il from something about the Me'il itself, namely the Rimonim, which are attached to the Me'il, rather than the Parochas, which has nothing to do with the Me'il? So you're right, the Gemara says, Hainu damrinan, l'shai begodim, shalai nema behen sheish. You're right, we're not learning directly from the Parochas. What we're learning is, from the fact that we said before, it says sheish. It said we quoted yesterday a pasuk about the Bigdei Kohuna, where there was a pasuk where it said a number of times the word sheish, and we said that teaches us that one of the extra times it says the word sheish teaches us that every time you have threads that go into making the Bigdei Kohuna, then unless otherwise specified, they have to be 6-ply threads. So that's where we're learning it from, ultimately, not from the Parechas, but from that extra word sheish. So we said, l'shar begodim, the other begodim, shaloi nema behen sheish, where it doesn't say sheish, the only beged of which we have that is the me'il. There's no other beged which doesn't contain sheish. Okay, next. We said Poreichas Esrim Rabbah. We said the Poreichas consists of 24-ply threads. Dalad de Shita Shita. Namely, the Poreichas is made out of 4 materials. Tchelas Agamon, Tchelas Shani, and Sheish. And each of them, we said before, was 6-ply. So therefore, 24. Loi Dinah, Loi Dayana. So there's no Din and no Dayan. In other words, there's nothing even to discuss about that. It's clear from everything we said so far that the Poreichas is made from 24-ply threads. Next, choshen ve'efod esrim v'shmona manolon. How do we know that the choshen and efod are made from 28-ply threads? So dechtiv, the pasuk says that osisa choshen mishpat maase choshev. You should make the choshen mishpat maase choshev. We're going to talk about on Amud Beis what maase choshev means. It means an expert type of embroidery. Kamase efod tasenu. You should make it the same way as you made the efod. And it consists of Zahav, Tchelas, Vargoman, Vaselas, Shani, Vashesh, Mashtar. So we have as follows. The four types of fabric thread, Tchelas, Argoman, Telas, Shani, and Shesh, Mashtar. So Abar, the Shita. So therefore you have 4 of 6 each. So that makes Esrim Abar. That makes 24, like we said before. And Zahav, Abar. And then the gold, there's 4 threads added. So therefore you have 28. So it's 28 altogether between the gold and the other ones. So the Gemara asks, so Zav HaBoha, Asir Nutsmanya, so therefore that gives you 28. So how do you know? The Gemara asks, Ve'ema Zav Nami Shisha, maybe the gold is also six threads per one, so then you would have 30 altogether. Six of gold, six of Tchela, six of Argomon, and so forth, making 30 altogether. The answer is Amar of Achba Yaakov, Amakra. Yes, but the Pasuk says when it mentions about the gold in Parshas Vayakel, it described. Now, mostly Vayakel and Pekodeh usually mostly repeat the details that we have in Truma and Tetzaveh. But in Vayakel, at the beginning of Parshas Pekodeh, one of the details that it didn't mention previously is how they made the gold threads. So the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says that they beat out sheets of gold, they hammered out sheets of gold, and they hammered out gold into very thin sheets. And then the Pasuk says, the kitzet psilim, they cut from it psilim. Psilim means threads. So in other words, what it means is there's a way of making gold thread by taking gold and stretching it to form wires. But that's not what they did over here for the Mishkan. Instead, what they did is they beat out the sheets of gold very thin, and then they use a knife or whatever to cut them into very thin strips. Yeah, it's a job, yeah. So therefore, the point is, since it says v'kitz it's psilim, So the word psilim, hare kandalid. Now, the word psilim itself implies two because it's a plural. Then when it says v'kitzets, you cut them, meaning you cut each one into two. So therefore, you have four. So therefore that tells you that you have four and no more than that. Tosfos over here. Like this, there are places in the Gemara where it says tafasta meruba lo tafasta. That if you try to argue that you're going to try to argue that you have X amount of something, and you're going to say, but maybe it means more, then you're going to say tafasta meruba lo tafasta. On the other hand, here in our sugya, sometimes we do seem to be doing that. We seem to be saying, for example, we said before, let's say, how do we know that? How do we know, for example, with the Rimonim that they're 24 ply, maybe they're 28 ply, and we slug that up before we were saying just now about the Me'il, how do we know it was 12 ply, maybe it's 16, etc. So here also, we're asking, how do we know that there's not four threads of gold, maybe there are six? What happened to Tafasta, Merubalo, Tafasta? Tosfos lays down a basic rule over here. When do we say tafasta, merubalo, tafasta? When you have where there could be an indefinitely large number. In other words, you're going to say, so it could be two, it could be four, it could just as well be eight, it could be 16. There's no, we don't have a way of knowing what the maximum is. Then we're going to say tafasta, merubalo, tafasta. But when we can say it's either this number or this number, maybe we should choose the larger number. So if we have, for example, by the Me'il before, we were saying it's 12, but maybe it's 16. So we would have said 16 were it not for the fact that we have a pasuk that tells us otherwise. And the same way over here, we would have said 6 were it not for the fact that we have a pasuk that implies 4. So since it says psil, and then it could have said b'kitzit psil, one ayin beis amud aleph. It could have said psil, instead it said psilim, so that means we start out with 2, then b'kitzit, we cut each one to 2, so that gives us 4. So therefore, you see that there were 4 gold threads mixed in. So again, you have six of Tchela, 6 of Telas Shani, etc., and 4 of gold. Rav Ashi says there's a different way that we know that there were only 4 gold threads. Omakra, because the Pasuk says that what do they do with these gold threads? That same Pasuk, the Kitzit Psilim, continues. Lasis Besecha Tchelas of Besecha Agamon. They place the gold threads within the Tchelas and within the Agamon and so forth. So they, in other words, each of the 4 types of fabric had gold threads blended into it. So now Rav Ashi says, hey, chinevid. So now if you were going to say that there were 6 gold threads, then how would you do it, considering you have 4 types of fabric? Nevid abad trei trei. If you put two gold threads in each of the types of fabric, havalahu tmanya. Then you have 8, because you have 6 plies of tchelas and 2 of gold. And that's not, we said before, sheish means that there's 6 apiece. Nevid trei de trei trei de trei de chad chad. Should we say that some of them will have 2 gold threads and others will have 1 gold thread, and you'll reach 28 that way? Again, v'osisa, it can't, Because the pasuk says you should make them, which implies shiyu kolos yosef shavos. All the different makings, when it goes into the choshen and the ephod, all have to be the same. Therefore, all the threads have to be the same type. So they all have to have the same amount of gold in them. So therefore, the maskana is that's how we get a 28 ply thread for the choshen and the ephod. We take six threads of tchelas and twist them together with one thread of gold to make a 7 ply thread. We do the same thing with the agamon, the same thing with the telatzroni, the same thing with the linen, the sheish, and then we twist them all together, and that makes a 28 ply thread, of which 24 are 24 are the different types of fabric, and 4 are gold, and those are the threads from which they wove the choshen and ephod. So now we understand, when we learned in the Gemara a few days ago, that the bigdei kahuna, the ones that are made out of shatnez, that is, the ones that are made with tchelas and that are made with wool and linen, we said that they were stiff. Now we understand why, because they're made out of 24 or 28 ply threads. Okay. Say what? Which Rashi are you looking at? Nevidaba Hamin. So you have two. If you're going to say that you were going to put two threads of gold in each one, then have a little tmanya. You would have eight threads. Then you would have eight threads shal zahav, and then you'd have eight threads of gold altogether. The problem with that is that then you have too many threads. Therefore, you have only one thread of gold in each one. Okay. Now that we talked about how the bigdei kahuna were made, let's talk about some dinim involving them. Omer Rach va'omer of Yehuda, hamakareya bigdei kahuna loike. If a person rips the bigdei kahuna, and we're talking about he rips them obviously for destructive purpose, he's not doing them for the purpose of fixing them or something, loike, then he gets malchus. Shenema, because the pasuk says by the me'il, lo yikareya, it shall not be torn. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk is, now you have to make you take the top of the meal and you fold it inward to make a double layer over there so that it doesn't rip. You have to remember how the meal was made. The meal was basically if you think of the way a talus cotton is shaped with a big hole in the middle for the neck and then it hangs down in the front and behind. The meal was similar except that it hung all the way down almost to the Kohen Gadol's feet. But it had a neck hole in the middle. So the neck hole would tear were it not for the fact that they doubled it inward to reinforce it, to hem it. But we're saying also the word lo yikareya means it shall not be ripped, meaning that if a person rips it, then he's over on a loisese. And once it says it by the me'il, then we learn the same thing is true by the other big dick kahuna. Maskiflar of Achaba Yaakov, but Rav Achaba Yaakov asks on that, why? Who says the word lo yikareya is meant to be a lav? The dilma hachi ka'ama rachmana. Maybe the pasuk is just saying, practically speaking, neved le suffak ki hechid le nekara. Make a hem for it so that it doesn't tear. We just started shloisha prachim of Rambam again, and some people instead of doing shloisha prachim are doing sefer hamitzvahs, which is every day the sefer hamitzvahs tracks the shloisha prachim of Rambam. But at the beginning of Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam goes through the Shorshim, the basic rules, how we know whether something is a mitzvah or not. In one of those Shorshim, the Rambam explains that you have, sometimes the Torah will tell you loy something, and it doesn't always mean do not do such and such. Sometimes it just means such and such doesn't have to be done, or such and such won't be done, or something like that. But sometimes it's a negation rather than telling you not to do something. So that's what Rabbi Achaba Yaakov is arguing over here. Lo yikareya is not necessarily a lav, do not tear it. It may be, it will not be torn because it'll have a hem. So the answer is, the Gemara says, miksiv shelo yikareya. If that was all, if it meant it as a reason, then it would have said, shelo yikareya, make a hem for it so that it doesn't get torn. The fact that instead the pasuk leaves out the shin and just says lo yikareya implies that yes, it is a lav. The Amr Rabbi Elazar, similarly, Rabbi Elazar says in a similar vein, Hamiziach Choshen Ma'ala Ephod. If a person disconnects the Choshen from the Ephod, now we know the Choshen was attached to the Ephod as follows. You had, there are golden cables hanging down from the shoulder straps of the ephod that went to that were attached to rings on the top corners of the choshen. So that way it was held up at the top like that with those golden cables. Then you had on the bottom edges of the choshen, there were rings over there. There were also rings on the back of the ephod, and they would attach, they would lace together. They'd use a string of tchelis to lace together the bottom of the choshen with the back of the ephod. So this way, now it's attached from the front like this, down from his shoulders, and it's attached from the side like this. With tchelis, right. So now Rabbi Elazar is saying that if a person disconnects the choshen from the ephod, and again, we're talking about where he does it destructively, he's not doing it for a constructive purpose, like to fix them, loika, then he's also going to get malchus. Now, before we talk about which connection are we talking about? Are we talking about the one on top, which there's no reason ever to disconnect that? Or if we're talking about the one on the bottom, obviously we're not talking about when the Kohen Gadol is getting undressed at the end of the day, because he has to undo those, otherwise he can't take it off. So then it would mean that if he takes it off in the middle, if he disconnects that in the middle of the avodah or something. Anyway, so that the hameser bade oren. Also, if a person removes the poles of the oren, loika. Also, he's getting malchus because those are also lavim. Shenema lo yizach. Again, the pasuk says that the choshen and the ephod are connected, lo yizach, the choshen shall not be disconnected from the ephod, and the lo yosuru, and also by the badim, the pasuk says they shall not be removed. But again, maskif Rav Acha bar Yaakov, again, Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, who says that those lois are meant to be lavim? The dilma kika omer rachmana, maybe the pasuk is just telling you a practical thing. Lo yizach means chadkinu v'avdinu shtapir, means when you're connecting the choshen and the ephod, tie them together very tightly so that they don't move one from the other. Because as Rashi describes on the pasuk, you don't want the Kohen Gadol is going to be walking around and the choshen is going to be banging and moving back and forth. You want it to be firmly on his chest. Like the talus, yeah. So maybe the pasuk is telling you, practically speaking, make sure that it's tightly connected. And the same thing. So chadkinu v'avdinu shaper. So attach them, make them nicely, tightly together. Kidei shelo yizach. In order that the choshen doesn't move from the ephod, and similarly, v'lo yasuru. Similarly, put the badim tightly into the rings of the aron, in order that they don't move from their place. And again, this Gemara says, Miksiv shelo yizach v'shelo yasuru. Again, the pasuk doesn't say in order that they don't move, or in order that they don't get disconnected, or in order that they don't move. If it said that, then yeah, it would be a reason; it wouldn't count as a lav. But because it says it in the form lo yizach, then it means not it will not move, but it shall not be moved, which makes it a lav. And in fact, the Rambam duly counts all these things as lavim in his list of the mitzvahs. So there is in fact a mitzvah. So all these three things, ripping the big kahuna and moving the poles of the aron and disconnecting the choshen from the ephod, each of them is a lav, where if a person does them, then he's punishable by malchus. Yeah. Well, if a person doesn't do it, then it's like any other. I mean, you can say the same thing. If a person doesn't eat chazir, then he's also being mekayim yosher v'loyos aveda, then he's considered as if he did a mitzvah. Yeah, sheval tafi. The Sefer HaChinuch talks about possible reasons behind each of these mitzvahs. For one thing, because the kalim are made in a certain configuration, they represent great concepts in other course, and therefore you're not supposed to tamper with them. As far as the Oran, he says particularly because the idea might be that at any moment they might have to go travel, because we know in the desert, whenever at any moment the Oren could lift up and they have to go travel, you don't want that first they're going to go start putting the poles in the Oren, because what if they don't put them in properly, and then when they try to carry the Oren, they'll drop it, which would be disrespectful to the Oren. So therefore it has to be with the poles always in place. That's one reason, in order that you're always ready to carry it at a moment's notice.
It covered all the furniture, and that was no problem for all the covers.
Nevertheless, though, the point is we want to make sure that the poles are in place and that it can't possibly fall off. So says the Sefer HaChinuch. The Rebbe learns a Hora from it. There's a Sicha in Chelek Chaf Ches where the Rebbe analyzes this whole business about ripping the Me'il and all these other things about, it's a Rashi Sicha, so he's focusing mainly on Rashi's Lashon in connection with each of these things. But he says, in other words, the idea is the same way. At a moment's notice, you have to be ready to go out to teach Torah to another Yid. That's the lesson from the poles of the Aron. With that said, though, by the way, Tosfos over here has a discussion and connection with the next piece of the Gemara that maybe you could learn that there were actually two sets of rings and two sets of poles on the Aron. There may have been, Tosfos says, by analyzing the Pesukim, there may have been actually eight rings on the Aron, a pair of rings on each corners, and one set of rings, so you have four rings through which you have two poles that are permanently in place, as we're saying over here, and then you have another set of rings, one on each corner, where you have poles in them that were placed in when they're actually going to be traveling, and that they would use those to carry it, and then you have the other poles that are in there permanently. Tosfos learns that might be a possibility. Okay.
So
in other words, there would be one set of poles that stays in there permanently and another set of poles that take it in and out and put in only when they're traveling, just like with most of the Kalim. Tosfos says that's a possibility, which would mean, if so, then Tosfos is necessarily disagreeing with the Sefer Achinuch's reason, because if his reason is that you have to have the poles in there all the time, right, so you don't accidentally put them in the wrong way and then drop the Aron, then obviously, according to Tosfos, that doesn't follow. Okay. Next. Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina Drum. Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina pointed out a contradiction between Pesukim. Ksiv v'tabay sa'oren yiyu abadim lo yasuru mimen. The Pesuk says the poles of the Aron should be in the rings of the Aron, lo yasuru mimen, or they should never be removed from it. So the poles are never taken out. Uchtiv, on the other hand, you have a Pesuk, v'huvos badav v'tabos, the bottom of it should be put in into the rings. Now, that pasuk itself is actually not talking about the Aron at all. That pasuk is talking about the Mizbeach, Achitza. However, so Hagoyis Habach points out a different girsa that Rashi and some other Rishonim have had, that the girsa is rather the pasuk of Hevesas, Abadim Metabois, which is in fact referring to the Aron. There's also Tosfos refers to, there's another pasuk that mentions in connection with when they're traveling with the Aron, the pasuk says v'samu badav, which on the face of it means they should place the badim into the rings. So what is it? Were the badim removed or not? So ha'ketzad. So Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says, how is that? Misparkin ve'en nishmatin. It means that the poles of the Aron could move back and forth, but they couldn't so easily come out of the rings. The ends of the badim were thicker. So therefore, if you wanted to get them out of the rings, you would have to force them in and out. So that's what the Pesuk is saying. You don't remove them. And if a person removes them, then as we said, he's Chayiv Malchus. But then you have the middle of them was thinner, so therefore they could slide back and forth. This way, for example, the Meiri says you want that, let's say, for example, when the Aron is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you wouldn't have the Aron centered on the poles necessarily. There's no reason to. Adrabi, you want, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that the ends of the poles would stick out in the Pareches and resemble Shnei Dada Isha, remember, resemble a woman's breasts under her blouse. So on the other hand, when they're carrying it, you want to make sure that everybody's carrying the same amount of weight. So you want the Aron to be centered on the poles, so therefore it could slide back and forth, but to get it in and out of the rings would take a lot of effort because the ends were thicker. So that's what we're saying over here. Rashi, I think, mentions that on the Pesuk. I don't remember, but yes. So Tosfos now has a whole discussion, which again leads into that point about the two sets of poles that Tosfos learns. One thing is, Tosfos says, that's why. Why is the Gemara bringing a Pesuk about the Mizbeach HaChitzon in connection with the discussion about the Aron? The point is, the same way as with the Mizbeach HaChitzon and all the other Kalim, they didn't keep the Badim in them permanently. There's no reason. When they're camped in a place for a while, they take out the Badim. When they're ready to travel, they put the Badim back in. So Tosfos learns, possibly, so it was with the Aron as well, with the second set of poles. Then you have the first set of poles that are permanently in place. Those, as we're saying, had thick ends so that they can't be taken in and out that easily. Tanya Nami, how can we learn? The first pasuk, the tabas aron yu abadim, of course, is talking about the Aron. The second pasuk, v'huva es badav v'tabos, the pasuk that we have printed in front of us in the Gemara, is actually referring to the Mizbeach. Now, so Hagoyis Habach says, obviously, that can't be. Why would a pasuk about the Mizbeach be in a discussion about the Aron? Necessarily, and this is how some other Rishonim have the Gersa, that instead the Gemara meant to quote a pasuk about the Aron. Where it says about the Aron itself, the Hevesas, Abadim, or Tabois, you should put the poles into the rings on the corners of the Aron. But now, Tosfos is saying that actually, no, the Pesuk that the Gemara is quoting for us is, in fact, the one it meant to quote. The point is, it's making a comparison. The same way as with the Mizbeach, they put the poles in only when they're going to travel. The same way with the Aron, the second set of poles they put in only when they're going to travel. Yeah.
One question for a second. Why you need ones that are movable for when they travel after you said that?
Right, so Tosfos doesn't explain why they would need two sets of poles, and in fact, Tosfos gets into a discussion which set would they actually have used to carry them. But nevertheless, Tosfos says it's possible to understand, based on our Gemara and based on an analysis of the Psukim, that there were two sets of poles. Maybe it's worth mentioning as a little bit of a milsa de b'dichasa. There was a little bit of a joking thing. There was a fellow about 50 years ago or so who came up with a notion that the Oron was actually a giant electrical generator. And he uses that to explain, supposedly, this is why you find that anybody who looked at the Oron or touched it when they weren't supposed to would die. Like you have the story of Uzzah and you have the story of the people of Beis Shemesh and whatever. So then he says, in that case, so the poles always had to be in it because those are like the poles of the generator. no poles, no electrical current. So, yeah. Okay, anyway. Fine. Getting back to the Gemara. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, that when the Pasuk says the Tabos Oren Yu Abadim, when the Pasuk says the Badim, the poles of the Oren should be in the rings of the Oren, Yochol Lo Yu Zozin Mim Koyman, you would think that means the poles are fixed exactly in place and they're not movable at all. No, Tamad Lama, but who was Bada Batabos? You have the Pasuk where we said that the Badim are put into the rings, so they're movable. So maybe that means you can freely take them in and out. No, because after all, the Pasuk says the Badim should remain in the rings, implying that they have to stay in there. As we said before, they could move back and forth, they could slide back and forth, but they couldn't be so easily removable unless you put in some effort into it because the ends were thicker. Talking more about the Aron, about the construction of the Aron, or about the construction of the Mishkan in general, what does it mean? The Pasuk describes about the Kroshim, it says they were made of Shittim wood standing. Now, why do you have to mention the point that they were standing? That means Sh'omdin Derech Gdilosan. Means not only they were standing. Now, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, it does mean that, in other words, they weren't laying down. Like you have, for example, Rashi mentions when you construct a wooden boat, you put down one piece of wood, then another one on top of it, then another one on top of it, etc. The Mishkan wasn't built that way. Rather, you had the poles were the beams were vertical. So fine. But on the other hand, Marsha points out, if you look at the way the structure of the Mishkan is described, you look at what it says as far as the height and the width and whatever, it's very clear that the beams are standing up. So why does the Pasuk have to add the word Oimdim? It means Sh'omdim Derech Gdilosan, they're standing in the direction in which they grew. Meaning the piece of wood that each piece of wood each beam is made from a piece of wood where the part that was when the tree was growing was closer to the roots is closer to the ground, and the part that was closer to the top of the tree is at the top. You have a similar thing with other mitzvahs. When you take lulav and esrog, for example, you have to have them right side up for the same reason, because in the direction in which they grow. Right. Dover acher, another explanation. The word oimdim. I mean, Dava Acha Omni means Shema Midin Es Tzipuyon. They keep their plating on them. We know that the Kroshim were plated with gold, so they keep their plating on. Rashi gives two explanations. One is that they would use golden nails to nail the gold sheeting on to keep it in place. In other words, Rashi is saying they didn't just wrap each keresh in gold and then it'll stay in place that way. They nailed it in place. Gold is fairly soft, but they can make it that, you know, you see, for example, they use it for certain structural things. They use it for the menorah, for example, is made completely out of gold. So they had some way of making it hard enough that it would actually keep its shape. So over here, similarly, they made sheets of gold. They beat out sheets of gold to plate to cover the crushing with, and those sheets were held in place to the crushing with nails. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that the crushing never rotted. Usually, wood eventually rots, and when the wood rots, then the plating falls off. Here, the wood of the crushing never rotted, so therefore the gold stayed permanently attached to it. It could be that it protected it also, but yeah. So that's Ma'amidin Netzipurim. Tosfos gives a third explanation that ma'midina sipuyan means usually when you have metal attached to wood, usually in halacha, usually the metal is more important than the wood. If you have a keli, for example, we know that wooden kelim are only makabel tuma under certain conditions. Metal kelim are more makabel tuma more generally. But if you have, so usually if you have a keli, which is part wood and part metal, then we go according to the metal. Here we do the other way around. Here we consider the wood as the important part and the metal is bottled there. So there's, in that sense, ma'midin et sipoyan, they make like the sipoy to be something significant where otherwise it wouldn't be.
Why it changed from the friend, from the kelim?
So, why? You're asking why is it that wooden kelim are matama different than metal kelim? Xeris akosiv, basically. I mean, when the posik lists about wooden kelim, how they become tamay, it mentions that they have to be, like you have a hekesh in the posik that mentions that they have to be similar to a sack. So therefore, it has to be metalto moly hurekon, it has to be that it's able to be carried around while it's full or while it's empty. It has to be that it has a base kibble, that it has some that it has a hollow in it so that something can go into. Otherwise, it's not makabel tumah. By metal, you have no such thing.
Yeah.
So in the case of the Krushim, in the case of the other kalim of the Mishkan, so the Gemara explains at the end of Chagiga, even though, let's say, for example, the Shulchan, so the Shulchan was wood and plated with gold, but the gold is bottled to it, and therefore it's not, and therefore it's not makabel tuma. Okay. Dover acher, a third explanation, oimdim, the word oimdim means shema tomar, you might say, ovad sivron voto sikuyan, their hope and their future is gone. In other words, what happened eventually with the Mishkan? The Mishkan was replaced by the Beis Mikdash. So what did they do with the pieces of the Mishkan? They hid them away under the Beis Mikdash. So you would think they're goners. They're never again going to return. They're never again going to be used. Tamad lema oimdim. Therefore, the pasuk says oimdim, meaning sha oimdim la olam alay lamim. They last forever and ever. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean. Now, there are some mafarshim that say that maybe that means when the third Beis Mikdash is built, Shibonim Herav Yamenu, that maybe the Mishkan will be set up over there also. But on the other hand, we don't have to say that. It could just mean, Marusha says, it just means you would think they're stored away. Eventually, they're going to rot away in storage. They've been there for thousands of years. No, Oimdim, it means they're going to stay. They're still there. They're still there forever. They're never going to rot. It's made by Moshe Rabbeinu, and there's a medrash that says, "Maisim Moshe Rabbeinu, Maisi Yedei Moshe Rabbeinu Nitzchim." Anything that Moshe made lasts forever. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rav Chama b'Rav Chanina, my dichtiv es bigdei asrod l'shores v'kodesh. The pasuk talks about the big day. The pasuk mentions the big day hasrod that were used to serve in the holy place. Now Rashi on the psukim in a few places explains that big day hasrod means actually the cloths that they used to pack up the kalim. As we said before, when they're going to be traveling, they wrapped up each of the kalim in some kind of cloth. You have it described at the end of Parashas Bamidbar. This one they wrapped up in tcheles, and then tachash. That one they wrapped up in algamon, and then tcheles, and so on and so forth. So Rashi explains in a couple of places that the Big Day Asrod are those. However, the Gemara over here is taking the view that Big Day Asrod actually means the Big Day Kahuna. So what does it mean as Big Day Asrod L'Shores V'Kodesh? Why are the Big Day Kahuna called Big Day Asrod, where the word Srod can be related to the word Sorid, which means a remnant? So why are the Big Day Kahuna called the Begodim of the remnant? So the reason is, if it weren't for the Big Day Kahuna, there wouldn't have been left from the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning, of course, the Jewish people themselves, there wouldn't have been left a sorted, a remnant, or polit, or a refugee. Now, why is it? How do the Big Day Kahuna have that effect? Rashi says, because when the Kohanim are wearing the Big Day Kahuna, then they're able to bring the Korbanos, and the Korbanos provide kapara for the Jewish people. On the other hand, a number of other Rishonim say that we're actually talking about the Big Day Kahuna themselves, and they refer to a Gemara in Zvachim. They refer to a Gemara in Zvachim, where the Gemara explains how each one of the eight Big Day Kahuna is mechaper for a different type of Avera. So therefore, if it weren't for the Big Day Kahuna, or as Rashi is saying, if it weren't for the Korbanos that are brought while wearing the Big Day Kahuna, then there would be nothing left of the Jewish people, Chas v'Shalom. So actually, Rabbeinu Yochim says nowadays we don't have the Big Day Kahuna. So how do we have that? So okay, according to Rashi that you're saying you're talking about the Korbanos, then okay, kol oisik v'toras ola, we learn the dinim of the Korbanos. It's considered as though we brought Korbanos. But Rabbeinu Yochim says that actually we learned earlier in the Masechta. We talk about in various places in Shas how the Chachamim saw the tzitz in Rome, and the same thing. The other Big Day Kahuna are still there. Adayem azeh. So therefore, in that sense, the big dikkun, even though now the kohenim are not wearing them, they're hidden someplace in Rome, in the basement of the Vatican or wherever, people. So yeah, they're during the churban, yeah. Yeah, they took them. But they're still there, and they still have that effect of being mechaper for us. Yeah. Okay, so that's one explanation why they're called Bigdei Hasurot. Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni Omer Dvei Rav Shimon. Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni says of something that he learned from the yeshiva of Rav Shimon, or Rav Shmuel, it says on the side, Tana, that we learn in a braisa from that yeshiva. The reason why they're called Bigdei Hasurot is Begodim Shegodin Oysen Kibir Yosin Nikolehem. These clothes are taken off the loom in the way that they're already shaped. Girdin literally means they scrape them off. In other words, they peel them off from the loom already in the shape that they're supposed to be. Meaning, in other words, you think about it. Let's say, for example, the ksonis. It had to surround the whole body of the kohen. So how would you make such a thing? The normal way to make it would be you'd make a sheet of fabric. You turn it around and then you sew up the seam. Instead, what they had over here is they wove them to begin with in the round. Like you have nowadays, for example, stockings are made that way, and other such clothes like that are made to begin with on a round loom. So therefore, they could remove them from the loom already ready made, and they leave off a little of them that's not woven with them. So what does that mean? Maihi, what part is not woven with them? Resh Lakish Omer Eila Maisi Macha. That means there's a certain part of them that instead of being woven is sewn together with needle and thread. So it says, Mace, you have a contradiction. A Bryce says, Big Dikona Enoisen, Mace Machat. You don't make the Big Dikona with needle and thread. Ela Mace Erdig, they have to be woven. Shenema Mace Erdig, as the Pasuk says, they have to be woven. Amar Abaya, Loin Nitzrucha Ela Base Yad Shalahem. So Abaya says, What we mean is the part that was left over and sewn together with them is the sleeves. Kedetanya, as we learn in Abraisa, base yad shabig de kohona neregas b'fnatzma, the sleeves. So, for example, the ksonis had sleeves, so the sleeves of the ksonis would be woven separately. V'nedbeka sima beged, it would be attached with needle and thread to the body of the beged. So you have, in other words, they would have a round loom that they would weave the main body of the ksonis. Then they had a different one that they would weave the sleeves on, and then they would attach the sleeves to. So each one of them, the body of the ksonis, then could be peeled off the loom as is. It doesn't have a seam in it. The same thing with the sleeves, and then the sleeves would be attached to the body of it with needle and thread. But in Bekas and Mabegad, it's attached together to the Begad. Or Magas, that piece of Sayyad, and the sleeves were long enough to reach the palm of the hand.
Big job.
Okay. Yeah, it was a big job, sure. That's why the Pasuk stresses again and again that they need Chochma for it, sure. Yeah. Okay. More about the Kalim of the Bismarck. Omer Rach v'Omer of Yehuda. Sholosh Aronis Osa B'Tzalel. B'Tzalel, now we said the Aron was made out of wood and it was covered with gold. So the way it was made is that B'Tzalel made three boxes. Emtsoi Shel Eitz, the middle one was made out of wood because the Pasuk says it has to be made out of wood and covered with gold. Now, you do have, we learned, now in Masechta Shkolim, which is the previous Masechta we learned before this one, we did have the opinion of Rish Lakish, who says nothing of that. It was just made out of wood and plated with gold, like things are usually plated with gold. But the Gemara over here is rather taking the view. It wasn't plated, but rather you had one box fitting inside another box. So you had the middle one was made out of wood, Tisha, and it was 9 tefachim tall. So Rashi explains what it means is the outer height of it, if you measure along the outside of it, it was 9 tefachim. The bottom of it, the floor of it, was 1 tefach thick. So the inside of it was only 8 tefachim tall, learns Rashi. Pnimi shel zahav shmona. Then you have an inner box of gold, which fit exactly within that one, and it had a lip that went over because you have to have the top edge of the wooden box has to be covered with gold as well. So you have a wooden box that had a flange sticking out, so in order to cover the rims of the wood, to cover the top edge.
One had a flange, just the middle one.
No, just the middle one. We're saying just had a flange to cover the top edge of the wooden box. And that one was shmoina. That one was 8 tefachim tall. Because again, so you have it has to exactly fit and it has to exactly cover the wooden box. So the wooden box from the inside. So therefore, since the inside height of the wooden box was 8 tefachim, you mind making your call someplace else, please? So since the inside of the wooden box was eight tochim, then therefore so was the gold box that height also. Okay. Chitzen asara umashu. And then there was an outer golden box, because the pasuk says it has to be plated with gold on the inside and the outside, and that outer golden box was 10 tefachim plus a little bit tall. So the 10 tefachim is, in order to hold within it, the golden box. Because, so what you have is, in other words, what we're learning is, so you have as follows. There's the outer height of the wooden box was 9 tefachim, so you need at least 9 tefachim, so you need 9 tefachim to cover that, plus a tiny bit for the bottom of the gold itself. The bottom of the gold itself didn't have to be a tefach thick. It could be just a thin layer. But and then you have, it has to stick up a tefach above that, because it has to cover the thickness of the kapodas. The kapodas was a lid that went on top of the aron. And what we're saying is the outer golden box, the side of it would cover up the side of the kapodas, so that the kapodas would be like this. And then you have it fits into. So you have the golden box and the kapodas fits inside it. And then you have a little bit more, because, as the Gemara is going to say, it had to stick out a little bit above, because the Pasuk says you had to have Zer Zahav Saviv, you had to have a golden rim all around. So that extra little bit was the rim that stuck up beyond the top of the Kapodos. So the Gemara says, Valtanya Achadoso Mashu. What do you mean? We have another Braisa that says that the outer box was 11 Tzvachim plus a little bit. And the answer is, Loikasha, Ha Commander Omer, Yesh Ba'ovya Tefach, Ha Commander Omer, En Ba'ovya Tefach. There's different opinions whether... There's different opinions whether the thickness of the golden box itself was a tefach, or whether the thickness of the golden box was just a thin layer. Rashi says, I don't know where that machlokes is. We don't find any place else in Shas or in Midrashim or whatever such an opinion that the bottom of the golden box was a tefach thing. But the Gemara apparently is saying over here that there was. Now, one issue with that, though, is so then my mashu who's there, and then the mashu that we're saying beyond the 10 or the 11 tefachim is the zer, is the rim on the top. Now, Rabbeinu Hananel has a different explanation, which most of the Rishonim accept. One problem with this is that the Gemara mentions in a number of places as a given that the Oren was only 10 tefachim tall. All of a sudden, we're saying there's an opinion over here that the Oren is 11 tefachim tall. So Rabbeinu Hananel has a different explanation. What it is like this. When we say that the inner box was 9 tefachim and the outer box was 8 tefachim, the wooden box was 9 tefachim and the inner golden box was 8 tefachim, what we mean is not that the thickness of the bottom of the wooden box was a tefach, like Rashi is saying. Rather, the thickness of the wooden box could have just been a mashu. It could have just been a fraction of an etzba or something. What it is the golden box that fit inside it did not reach all the way to the top of the wooden box. So you had it covered the bottom 8 tefachim of the wooden box and left a tefach of its height exposed. So then, according to that, there's no flange on it either. Now you have the outer box, the outer golden box was made extra tall, was made 11 tefachim tall, so that it had ends of it that could be bent inward to cover the rims, to cover the tops of the wooden box, and also go in one tefach to cover that remaining tefach of exposed wood. So in other words, at the end, the aron comes out only 10 tefachim tall, according to everybody. What we're saying is, depending whether you say how thick the wood was or how thick the gold was, then you're going to have the outer golden box had to be 10 or 11 tefachim tall in order to have an extra piece that you could bend over inside and cover the remaining part of the upper walls of the wooden box that hadn't been covered before. That's how Rabbeinu Hananel learned, and most of the Rishonim accept that explanation.
You don't have to have the middle one have that.
So according to that, the inner one doesn't have to have that flange, exactly. Okay. Okay, right now we're in the middle of learning. Okay, so we mentioned the zeir, we mentioned then this rim that you had on top of the oron as a decorative rim. So, there were actually three kalim in the Beis Mikdash that had rims like that. Shel mizbeach, v'shel oron, v'shel shulman. The mizbeach meaning the mizbeach hazav. Shel mizbeach, so each of those represents a crown of distinction that you have that thing. The crown on the mizbeach represents the crown of kahuna. The crown on the shulchan represents the crown of kingship and riches. Rashi mentions on the pasuk, like you speak of shulchan malachim, the table of kings, like you have in Pirkei Avos, v'al tisav al shulchan and shul malachim. And then the crown on the Oren represents the crown of Torah, which is the three crowns that I mentioned in the Pirkei Avos: Keser Torah, Keser Kohuna, and Keser Malchus. So Shel Mizbeach, the one on the Mizbeach, which represents the crown of Kohuna, Zocha, Aaron, and Nukla. Aaron had this host, and he took that for himself and his descendants as a permanent thing that they were the Kohen. Shel Shulchan Zocha David Menotlai. The one on the Shulchan represents kingship that David had the schos and took for all future generations. Shel Oren Adayin Munachu. The crown on the Oren, the crown of Torah, is still available. Kol Aroitz Likach Yovei V'Yikach. Anybody who wants to take it, come and take it. The Torah is free and open for everybody to learn and to become a Talmid Chacham and to make it permanently part of his family for all time to come. So you're going to say, well, maybe that means if nobody laid claim to it, if it's available for anybody to take, then it must not be as important as Kahuna and Malchus. No, Talmud Lema, be Malachim Yimloichu. Therefore, instead, the Pasuk says about the Torah with me, this is the Torah, as if like the Torah is speaking about itself, with me, kings will rule, meaning in other words, like the Torah is what crowns kings, and therefore that means the Torah is more important than kings. So how do we see, as like we have in Pirkei Avos, this coming Shabbos, Gdola Torah, Yosef mina Kohuna mina Malchus. That Torah is greater than Kohuna and Malchus. So where do we see it's greater than Kohuna? So there's a few possibilities. One of them is because the Pasuk also says about the Torah, Yikarehi mipninim, it's more precious than jewels. And the Gemara elsewhere, Darshins, that mipninim means mikoyin gadol shenichnas lefnai v'lefnim, that the Torah is even greater than the Kohen Gadol who goes lefnai v'lefnim into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So we see that Torah is greater than Kohuna. Another possibility, the Bach mentions on tour, because the next Pasuk, after it continues, be malachim yimloichu, the next Pasuk continues, be sorim yasoru, through me, princes are able to exercise princeship, and we know there are various psukim where the word koyin is used as a synonym of the word sar. Like, Ebuvnei David koyinim hayu, doesn't mean that it's children of koyinim, they're from Shevet Yehuda, means they were important ministers, so we see that sorim yosoru can refer to the koyinim exercising their duties. So we see, therefore, that Torah is greater than that as well. Okay. Rabbi Yechanan pointed out an apparent contradiction between the kri and the ksiv in the pasuk. Ksiv zor v'kodin and zer. When we talk about this crown around the orein, so we say that we said that it had zer zahav savid. Now the word is written in the Torah without the yud. Sometimes you have a tseire has a yud after it. Here it doesn't. It's zayin, it's tseire zayin, and then resh. So it can be read if you don't have the nekudas. You would read it as zor, which means foreign. And then instead we read it v'kodin and zer, but we read it as if the yud was there with a tseire. So what does that mean? Zocha nasis loizer. If a person is zoicha and learns Torah l'shem shemayim, then it becomes a crown for him. Loizocha. And if he doesn't have the schus, if he doesn't learn Torah with the proper intentions, or he's not makayim, what he learned or whatever, zora haymenu, then it becomes foreign to him. Like he forgets his learning. He forgets his learning, and it becomes something. And it becomes something that doesn't help him out. So Marashah explains when it comes to the shulchan and the menorah, and when it comes to the shulchan and the mizbeach, same idea. It can also, we know historically, there were people who lost the kingship, for example, Shaul. There were people who lost the kohuna, for example, Eli HaKohen, not lost the kohuna, but lost the kohuna Gdola at least. Well, no, so yeah, lost the kohuna. For example, it describes in Sefer Ezra how there were certain people who couldn't prove their yichus, and therefore they were assumed to be chalolim because they can't show definitively that they're kohen. So you have the same kind of thing. You can have a person, that if a person is doing L'shem Shemayim, then he keeps the kohuna and he keeps the malchus, and if not, then not. Okay, Rabbi Yechanan also pointed out, now in this connection, Tosfos Yeshanim mentions over here, and regular Tosfos mentions in various other places in Shas, there's different degrees of learning Shaloi Lishma. Sometimes you have, the ideal is a person learns Torah Lishma in order to connect with the Eivishtim. Then you have a person who learns Shaloi Lishma, for example, because he needs to learn, practically speaking, what to do and what not to do. Sometimes you can even have a person is learning Torah in order that people should honor him. It's not the right reason to learn, but on the other hand, it's not so bad. What we're talking about over here is sometimes you have a person learn lekanter. He learns in order to be able to show off how much learning he has. He learns in order to be able to use it in order to attack other people. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about over here, that nasas zoroloi, that it becomes foreign to him and it becomes something bad for him. With that said, though, that Rebbe once pointed out in a sicha, after all, even though the Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya, that a person learns with such intentions, he's bringing chayus into klippos. Nevertheless, lo yudach mimenu nidach. Eventually, everything that he learned is going to be nisala somehow or other. Maybe in this gilgul, maybe in a future gilgul. Therefore, they continue doing it and then work on afterwards. Being mileyed afterwards, don't just say forget it. I'm not going to learn at all. Work on continuing to learn, but then motivate yourself to do it for the right reasons and to do tshuva and to be mileyed the Torah that you learned previously improperly to
But
that's the thing. So it doesn't say you should better not learn. It says maybe noyach lo shel nivra, better that he shouldn't have been created or something like that. But once he's been created and once he is learning, then the better thing is, yeah, don't continue. Obviously, don't continue with that motivation and that attitude. As soon as possible, work on doing tshuva in order to be mila what you did before. But don't just say forget it. I'm going to stop learning. Okay. So more on that topic. Rabbi Yechanan Rami. Rabbi Yechanan pointed out another contradiction regarding the Oren. Hashem tells Moshe, make for yourself an Oren of wood, implying that he himself should make the Oren. On the other hand, it says they should make the Oren of Shittim wood. So what is it? Who's making it? Moshe or the people? From here you learn that people have to do a Talmud Chacham's work on his behalf. So in other words, it's Moshe's to do, but Hashem tells him that it should be delegated to the people to do because Moshe is busy learning and teaching Torah, and therefore they should be stepping up and doing the job instead. And therefore, Bezalel, in particular, Bezalel, it says, was Moshe Nefesh to understand how the Oren should be made and make it with all the Kavanot. Yeah. Okay, the Pasuk says about the Oren, Mibayis Michut Tzapenu, you should cover it with gold on the inside and on the outside. So Omar Rava, we learn from that. Kol Tamid Chacham she'en teichei kibarei, a Tamid Chacham who's inside is not like his outside. In other words, that he on the outside he looks like a Tamid Chacham and he's saying what you need to do and what you're not and what you don't. But on the inside, in private, he does all kinds of averus. Ain't a Tamid Chacham. Such a person is not a Tamid Chacham. Now, with that said, though, in that case, the Mephoshim talk about, so why is the Oren made with any wood at all? So the Oren should be made completely gold. Why is it a wooden box? And then we said there's a gold box on the inside and a gold box on the outside. So the Marashah brings, the Mizrahi on the Pasuk brings a couple of Midrashim on it. One of them, he teaches you to have respect even for a poor Talmud Chacham, even if he's not like gold, he's only like wood. Another reason is because the Torah is Eitz Chaim. Marashah says the reason is a person himself is compared to a tree, Ki Adam Eitz Asada. Therefore, the body of the Aron has to be made out of wood, and then it's plated with gold on the inside and the outside, like we're saying over here, that a person needs to have Teuchi Kibari. His inside needs to match his outside, not that he's a hypocrite.
I would think that
that's what we're saying. In other words, the fact that you have gold in and out shows that Teichei Kibarei. The fact that you have wood in between them is to represent these various ideas. Because the Torah is like a tree, and a person is like a tree, and so forth.
Inside
there's wood. I once saw a vertan, and also I don't remember the source, that the idea is you might sort of like what we were just talking about now about learning Torah, Shaloi Lishma. A person might think to himself, I'm only wood. I'm not on the level of gold yet. Maybe I shouldn't bother learning Torah. After all, I'm not completely refined inside and out. My pnimius is still only wood. No, you learn Torah as long as Teichei Kibarei, as long as what you feel, as long as what you're doing on the inside in private matches what you're doing on the outside, don't worry about what your pnimius is. Your pnimius you can refine later. Similar to the way you have in Chassidus, it talks about that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you have the Gemara in Brachas, tells us that before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai passed away, he's crying and saying, I don't know which direction I'm going to be taking. What do you mean you don't know which direction you're going to be taking? He's been learning and teaching Torah for 120 years and he's worried that he might not be going to Gan Eden. No, it's not so much the Yetzirah. So in Chassidus, it talks about the idea. All his life, he'd been so busy with avodah of learning and teaching Torah, he has no time to think about what his pnimius really is. So his pnimius might be completely no good. And only now, when he's on his deathbed and he has no more avodah to do, now is the time to be concerned about that. So in other words, you can have a person's pnimius can be not where it should be, but as long as his inside and his outside is good, like we're saying over here, then that's good enough.
That could be like in the
Beis HaMikdash Shlishi, will it be pure gold? I don't know. It's a good question. You still have the other things to represent, for example, that the Torah is at Eitz Chaim and that a person is Ki Adam Eitz Asada. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. Omar Abaya, Vitamin, Rabba Ba'ullah, So Abaye, or some say Rabbi Ba'ula, says not only is he not only a person who's not Teichik Barai, is not a Talmid Chacham, Nikra Nisav, a person who's like that, who's a hypocrite, who acts differently in private than he does in public, is called disgusting. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Afki Nisav B'Nelach, also a person is considered disgusting and horrible. Ish Shoyse Kamayim Avla, a person who drinks water and has avla and has injustice. In other words, Torah is compared to water. So when a person drinks water of Torah and yet he has avla, yet he has unjust things that he does in private, averus that he does in private, then he's considered nisa v'nelach, is considered disgusting and horrible. Amar Rav Shmuel Nachmani, Amar Rav Yenison, more on this topic. My dichtiv, what does it mean a pasuk? Lama zemechir biyad ksil liknes chachma. What's the purpose? Why? What good does it do to a fool to have money for exchange in his hand to buy chachma? The lev ayin, but he doesn't have a heart to learn Torah. So we're not talking about a fool, in other words, a person who doesn't have the mental capacity to learn Torah. Let him learn Torah. Let him learn Torah and Torah. We mean that he doesn't have the heart to, as in other words, he doesn't have the motivation to learn to learn in order to be mekayim the mitzvahs, and instead he's still doing averus, as we're saying. So oy lahem, so an end shel tamid chachamim. So woe to the enemies of tamid chachamim, meaning the tamid chachamim themselves. She oyskin matorah, but ain behem yiras shemayim. They learn Torah, but they don't have yiras shemayim. So what good is their learning doing? As we said before, they have to develop yiras shemayim and then be mile of the Torah they learned that thus far. But as long as they don't do that, What good does it do them to have this mechir, to have this something that they're going to give in exchange for being able to learn Torah, if they're not working on developing the lev of Yiras Shemayim? So Machri is Rabbi Yanai announced in this connection, Chaval the Lesle Darta, woe to the, what a pity, what a waste for the person who doesn't have a courtyard, but Tara the Darta of it, and he makes a gate for his courtyard. So what good does it do? He wasted his time making a gate when he doesn't even have a courtyard to lead into. The same way, a person who learns Torah without Yiras Shemayim. Now, it does talk, we have in Pirkei Avos, Imen Yira in Chochma, Imen Chochma in Yira. There are a few places, there are a couple of places in Tanya, in Perek Chav Gimel and Perek Mem Gimel. There's a number of other places in Chassidus and the Kutei Torah and other places where it talks about those different levels of Yira. There's a certain basic level of Yira that a person has to have in order to learn Torah in the first place. And then you have, there's a higher level of Yira, there's Yira Ilah, which a person comes to as a result of learning Torah. That's the one we're talking about over here. When we're saying that the Torah, that the whole Torah, as important as it is only like a gate into go into the courtyard, that means the courtyard of that higher level of Yiras Hashem. As opposed to, then you have a more basic level of Yira that you have to have as a prerequisite for learning Torah. And in this connection, Amalahu Rava L'Rabban, and Rava says to the Talmidim of his yeshiva, V'matusa minaychu, I beg of you, lo sirtum tauta gehenim, don't inherit a double gehenim. Meaning, what's going to happen? You're going to be working hard. You're going to be harving in Torah in this world. So you're not, but so you're denying yourselves pleasures of this world in order to be learning Torah at such a high level. Meanwhile, you're not going to fulfill it. So what's going to happen? You're going to wind up in Gehenna. So it comes out, you got a double Gehenna. You lost this world and you lost the next world. So be careful. If you're spending so much time on learning Torah, at least make sure that you're fulfilling what you're doing and developing Yiras Shemayim. So that at least way, fine, you're giving up the pleasures of Olam Hazeh, but you're getting Olam Haba. As opposed to if you don't, then yeah. And Amar Rabbi Yishur ben Levi, my dichtiv v'zoyz ha-Torah asher som Moshe. What does it mean? The Pasuk says this is the Torah that Moshe placed. Why are we using the expression placed in connection with the Torah? Asher limed Moshe, asher nosan Moshe, something like that. It means som is Moshe sam, a potion. Zocha, if a person is zoycha and learns Torah for the right reason, nasas lois sam chaim, that it becomes for him a potion, a life-giving potion, an elixir. And if he's not Nasus Loi Sam Misa, then it becomes the opposite. But again, it doesn't mean stop learning. It means learn and then work on being Mila, the learning that you did so far for the improper reason. Behind Rava, this is like what Rava says, the Uman law, a person who treats the Torah as his craft. So in Shabbos, the expression is my minimba, that Rashi explains over there. He learns it with a chayus and with an energy, like a person's right hand, which is a stronger hand. He puts his effort into it. Uman over here would mean the same thing, that he considers it his umnus, he considers it his main craft, it's an important thing to him. Sama de chaya, it's for him, Torah is a sam chaya. Deloy uman la, and if not, sama de moisa, then it's the opposite. Similarly, the Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Rabbi Yonasan Rami, Rabbi Yochanan pointed out a contradiction. Ksiv Pikudi Hashem Yishor Misamchilev. It says the mitzvahs of Hashem are straight. They gladden the heart. So in other words, Torah makes a person happy. Uchtiv, but you also have a pasuk. Imras Hashem Tzrufa. The words of Hashem are Tzrufa. The word Tzrufa means refined. So in other words, that suggests the Torah refines a person. And refining is not always a pleasant thing. Refining can involve Yisurim. It can involve Gehenim. So what is it? Does Torah make a person happy or the opposite? So the same thing. Zocha, if a person is Zoicha and learns Torah for the right reasons, Misamachta, that makes him happy. Loi Zocha, and if he's not Zoicha like that, Tzirachta, then the Torah refines him that he has to undergo Yisurim and Gehenim, and then he winds up in the right place afterwards. Rish Lakish Omar, Rish Lakish says you don't even need the contradiction between Sukkim to learn that. You learn that from the Pasuk itself. Zocha, if the person, because the word Srufa itself, you can have a refining that's for good and a refining that's not so good. Zocha Tzairach Lachayim, if a person is Zocha, then he has a refinement which is for life, where we have sometimes Sukkim that refer to the word Sorach. In a good connection, a person goes through a process of tziruf where he ends up the better for it. Loi zochah, tzeraf to the misa, and if not, then he has to go through a more painful kind of tziruf.